Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 340 for February 28th, 2018. Gordo batteries and smoked chicken. Hi, welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. I'm George, W5JDX. Bob Heil is not with us tonight. You know what that means? When Bob is gone, I give away his stuff. So
there
we're
going to
be giving away a nice set of Heil ProSet 3s here a little later in the show. But we've got a group of the regulars here. First off, the most interesting man in ham radio, Gordon West.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Tonight we're talking about these guys. We're talking about your favorite one of these guys. We're talking about, does it really make a difference, a 78-cent battery versus a dollar and a quarter battery inside your battery tray? So that's what's in store. George, back to you.
That sounds like fun stuff there, Gordo. I want to hear more about the batteries. We've also got our friend just down to the south here, Don Wilbanks. Say hello, Don.
Hello, Don. Hey, guys. How are you? I want to let you know I want to let you know that WTWW shortwave on 5085 is back at 100,000 watts, maybe just a smidgen more when he cranks the golden screwdriver just right. So hello to all the WTWW listeners. Email at WTWW.us is a great way to communicate with them if you've got something ham radio related that you want to share. They play some great country music when the Ham Nation isn't on, and they play Amateur Radio Newsline and all kinds of other things. And speaking of Amateur Radio Newsline, the Young Ham of the Year Award nominations open up tomorrow, and we'll tell you more about that in just a little bit, George.
Okay, Don. That sounds fun, too. And, of course, we save the best for last. The first radio of Ham Radio, it's Amanda.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Delta wanted to say hi to you. Hi. Not a lot going on here in Colorado. We're just warming up, so I'm excited about that. And I got my plants started in my greenhouse in the next room. So that's all I have. You guys send me your questions during the chat room tonight, and we'll see what we can get answered by who.
Okay, Amanda. We'll be back with you here shortly. But now let's go to Gordo, because I know he's got he's got hot topics for us tonight. One of them sounds particularly acidic to me. Gordo?
Well, we do have hot topics, and because you wanted batteries, I did a lot of testing between the more expensive copper top batteries. These are the Duracell versus batteries that I picked up at the dollar store that were much less than a dollar a piece. And I was curious as to the amount of runtime they would provide to handhelds that had the battery tray. And the copper top Duracells went about 2 hours longer than these. I mean, they ran all day, and then these pooped out just before the copper top. So I thought, well, that's a pretty interesting test. I put the radio down. About a month later, I picked up the radio and I opened it up, and the non-Duracell copper top batteries were fine, but these others had leaked badly. So if you're thinking about runtime, think more about what's going to happen inside that handheld with a less than known brand name copper top battery because they very well could leak once they are depleted. Remember, your handhelds, if they turn on and off with a click, they're off. But if they turn on and off your handheld by pushing a button, it's still on, even though you pushed the button to turn it off. So something to think about, a soft on means that when you turn it off, it's still sucking about a microamp or two or three out of your batteries. Well, let's go from batteries to coax cable and a common problem where I wiggle the coax and my pal's radio station reception fades in and out. Let's talk about why that happens. So, Victor, if you want to go ahead and roll the short shot. This is the PL-259. Now, whether they're gold or silver or brass or bronze, they all do their job. But most important is find out what the insulation is. If the insulation is Teflon, this is great. You're going to probably spend $1.50 to $2 for a PL. But if you got some bargain PLs that are not Teflon, they'll probably work okay. But what occurs is without Teflon, just a regular white plastic, when you solder the center conductor, it's going to deform and it's just going to be a mess. So always insist on Teflon or maybe Bakelite. Those would do well under heat. So the PL-259 is the second one over on the left. That's a Bannett connector all the way left. That's an N connector for UHF. That's the SMA, and there's two versions. There's male and female. And then the right-hand one is, that's an F connector for TV or other things like that. The PL-259, once the coax is soldered, screws right into the back of the radio. And that jack on the back of the radio is called an SO239. But take a look at this gold connector. What's wrong? I'll tell you, the adapter, the UG175 or UG176, that adapter is not properly seated. And I bet if you wiggle the black coax, the reception is going to become intermittent. Now, that's the back of the transceiver. That's a regular SO239. When we see coax like this, it's had it. There's no cutting it back and putting a new connector on it. You'll never be able to solder. So if ever you see the cracked jacket, and that's the outside covering, the jacket that is cracked has allowed moisture to get in, that coax connector and that coax run is history. You're going to need to replace all of it. There is no saving that particular one. Coming out of DX Engineering, they've got plenty of coax cable, including a double shield low loss coax. And I like DX Engineering because I can call them, tell them what I'm planning on doing, and they'll recommend the right kind of coax. So let's just take a look and see what it's like to solder a PL-259 onto DX Engineering RG8X coaxial cable. First of all, you're going to need a good pair of nibblers or diagonal cutters. And once you get used to them, you're able to maneuver them around and do some great things. But if you're using somebody else's diagonal cutters, you never know quite how they're going to behave. And when you're cutting away the outside jacket that we see here, the gray part, we want to make sure that we don't nick the braid. Now, there goes the UG-176. I slide it over. Don't forget the next connection. That little barrel guy goes over as well. Now, you are ready to do it. All of us have done it. We have soldered things together and then realized that we forgot the outside barrel or something else. Very carefully with your favorite nippers, you want to expose the copper braid on the inside. It might be silver tinned copper braid if it's for marine installations. Carefully peel away the jacket. You may want to save the jacket because usually it's the jackets that DX Engineering always look for is UV resistant. So it's not going to break down in direct sunlight. But save it because you may need to cover something else outside with it. So there's our nice 98% copper weave, and this is good. You want to make sure that if it's double braid, that the inside, which is usually aluminum foil, and there it is. Now, we're not going to be soldering to the aluminum foil, just to the inside copper braid. So what we do is we fan out the copper braid. It looks a little strange, but this was done in the field. And with a pair of diagonals, we cut away the aluminum because the aluminum is not going to take any solder. So we just chop it out. And then we prepare the connection, and we're going to be folding the copper back onto the UG-176. So we're going to hopefully solder it. And I say hopefully because so many times I find that it was not properly soldered. And see that little tag of aluminum? We're going to go ahead and cut that off as well. Now we're ready to address the end, the center conductor of the coaxial cable. And we go ahead and get it prepared. Now you have to be careful. If you look carefully, you see a couple of those little tiny copper strands, they're going to get you in trouble unless you properly get them set. Now, different ways of doing coaxial cable, but the big thing is if that outside copper braid contacts the inside copper, we're in trouble. So if you see something like this, you've got to do a lot of mooshing around to make sure you have a nice, clean connection. All right, we got them. I like to always check with an ohm meter, making sure that I've not shorted out or had any of those fold back on themselves. Many times I'll also tin that inside center conductor so it I don't have a chance of just one of those folding back on itself and causing the connector to short out. And I want to make sure that I can look through the hole and see a good portion of the braid because I'm going to need to solder not only the braid, but also that UG-176 adapter. So I'm ready to roll. This is my tool. It is the large 200-plus watt soldering gun. The soldering gun is what it takes to get the job done. If you try and do it with a little pencil soldering iron, especially out in the wind, you're never going to have a good soldered connection. And I like to hold the soldering gun right into the hole and then feed in the coaxial cable. And I get it all set, make sure that nothing is going to be shorted out. And I feed in the solder and presto. Notice the tip is in pretty good shape. And we're going to go ahead and solder through the holes. And this is what I'm looking for. And that is a well-soldered hole. But more important, and we'll show you in just a moment what we're really looking for. And I always like to take about 5 or 6 turns of the coax cable just as a choke to keep any RF from coming back. So, Victor, if you'll come back to this, here is the UG-176. It's this little guy right here. And what occurs is, if it turns and you've already done your soldering job, you have not soldered all the way through to get this to match up with the copper braid and to match up with the holes that you see here that have not been properly soldered. So if you have an intermittent connection and you just can't seem to figure out what it is, first of all, if you did it with a big soldering gun, this is good. But if you tried to solder a PL259 with a little 75-watt iron, it can be done, but you may want to think about going to a crimp connection. But here is the deal, and that is this should be tightened all the way down, and then you want to get it soldered through the holes, and then the big test is, can you unscrew it? And if it unscrews out the little adapter here, then you have not soldered it all the way properly. So make sure that you don't have any loose adapters because that's what's going to cause the outside braid to lose contact with the SO239 connector on your radio. So I encourage you all to do your best soldering. Do it with a nice hot soldering iron, and you'll be doing PL259s in great shape. And again, that adapter is the UG-176. But for it to be effective, you've got to make sure that when you solder the braid, The braid is also soldered right onto this after it's screwed all the way in. So you don't want to have this back out. So, Don, that's my story, and I encourage all of you to work with DX Engineering because those folks have soldered, they have crimped, they have done everything with coax cable and will be your best source of information if you have a project and you need to get the right coax and the right coaxial cable adapter. So now here comes Don with more about DX Engineering.
But first, I believe we have an image.
An image.
But yeah, but go ahead, Vic. Pull that little picture up that I sent to you the other day or yesterday, whenever it was. There it is.
Oh, my.
That's what happens. That's what happens when you grab the wrong hot end of the soldering iron. That be really careful when you solder. If you grab the narrow end, that's the face you make. You don't want to do that. Don't grab the skinny end.
You got me, Don. Chicken? You got me, buddy.
Next thing people are going to ask is that chicken? Chicken?
I'm not sure.
Smells like burning ham to me. Hey, listen, if you don't want to, you know, take the, if you don't want to make that kind of face, you can always go to DX Engineering and get these pre-made jobs. If you ever go over to DX Engineering at Talmadge, Ohio, go back in the back and watch them make these pre-made coax assemblies. It's amazing how they do that. I was back there and watched them, and this heat shrink tubing has heat-activated glue on the inside. And they high-pot test all of these, but the lady who was doing them, she noticed that the heat shrink tubing wasn't all the way up to snuff. So she cut it back and took the connector off and put a new piece of heat shrink on it. Or actually, I don't know that she cut the connector. Anyway, she reheated it and reseated it and made it just perfect. That's the kind of attention to detail at DX Engineering. So roll your own with DX Engineering stuff, or their cable assemblies are great. And if you're going to do new cable, you may as well just go all the way, you know, because spring's here. Time to upgrade your shack for the new year. Go ahead and put a whole new antenna up. Replace the old one. You're doing the coax. May as well replace the aluminum, too. The place to go, of course, is DX Engineering. They offer a wide range of antennas in all types and configurations, including the OptiBeam Elite Class German-engineered HF and VHF directional antennas. VHF stuff there. HF, VHF directional. DX Engineering is now the exclusive North American retailer of OptiBeam. And DX Engineering carries all the amateur radio models, including Yagi's 4.6, modest to massive monobanders. Say that three times real fast. I am a professional pronosticator. And 80 through 10 meter multibanders. OptiBeam antennas are computer designed, computer optimized, meticulously crafted. They are never mass produced. They are tested to deliver the highest possible gain, cleanest radiation patterns, low SWR, and excellent front to back ratios. They're made from high quality aluminum alloys, UV stable synthetic parts, and stainless steel hardware. And of course, DX Engineering Skyhawk antenna is an excellent choice for long distance contacts. In fact, there may not be a better 2015 and 10 meter tri-bander on the market. So trap-free design gives you the best bandwidth and the lowest possible loss. Aluminum, stainless steel components contribute to the lowered weight and excellent corrosion resistance that will give you years of trouble-free on-the-air service. Want to get on the Wark bands? Well, the DX Engineering Skylark will do that. It covers 17 and 12 instant band changes. You enjoy close to 8 dB gain on either band at an SWR under 1.3 to 1 across each band. Relatively short, only a 16-foot boom. Lack of moving parts make it easy to handle winds up to 90 miles an hour. And DX Engineering is the authorized North American distributor of EA antenna. HF and VHF antennas found in some of Europe's most competitive DX stations. That means you get these world-class antennas without the hassle of international shipping. These rugged, high-performance antennas won't break the bank either. The EA antenna line has a huge range of designs. HF, VHF, UHF, including Yagi's, wire dipoles, quads, and loops. It's all there in the DX Engineering catalog. And, of course, you know DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice, the best people in the business, and the most knowledgeable, too. Call them on the phone, man. If you've got a problem, done. DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. We love them here at Ham Nation. We love them even if we weren't here at Ham Nation, because we love them. They're great folks, DX Engineering. Now, why don't we get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. Gordo Face.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2104, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 28th, 2018. The controversial issue of distracted driving laws on ham radio can be a particularly murky area, even more so when it comes to hams traveling outside their home territories.
An Amateur Radio Newsline report several weeks ago noted that U.S. hams wishing to operate mobile while behind the wheel in New Brunswick, Canada, would be breaking the law. While a reciprocal treaty for radio operators does exist between the U.S. and Canada, a tangle of local regulations has caused much confusion and appears to supersede this treaty. Distracted driving regulations have been imposed by state and provincial governments in both the U.S. and Canada. Individual amateurs and groups have lobbied their own localities for exemptions for amateur radio operation. Where such exemptions for radio exist, language in many of those regulations only allow for mobile operation by amateur radio operators provided they are licensed residents of that country. Newsline has not been able to find any instances of an American amateur being cited in the provincial distracted driving regulations. Conversely, distracted driving regulations in Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Nevada, New York, Oregon, Washington, and West Virginia require an FCC license for legal mobile amateur operation. Only the state of New Jersey generically specifies licensed amateur radio operators may operate mobile. Thus, for a Canadian amateur radio licensee to operate mobile in the U.S. would require that those operators also hold a valid FCC license. Amateurs in either country need to research the distracted driving regulation in the state or province they plan to operate in and be prepared to defend a moving citation. Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
And the controversy isn't limited to the U.S. and Canada.
In Sweden, the SSA, the country's national amateur radio organization, recently asked the government to revisit legislation that bans the use of mobile phones whilst driving. The radio group is hoping to clarify the wording, which it fears may impact on hams operating mobile in their vehicles as well as on those in the transport industry. The group is asking in its letter to the Ministry of Food and Transport that the wording make it clear that the ban is not applicable to handheld microphones attached to radios mounted in inside the vehicles. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
The amateur radio community has suffered yet another major loss. A ham with a prominent role among Australian amateurs has passed on.
Jim Linton, VK3PC, a mainstay of the Wireless Institute of Australia, which he served as executive secretary, has become a silent key. He died on Thursday, the 22nd of February, following a short battle with thyroid cancer. Jim, who was one of the WIA's longest-serving office holders, joined the organisation as a teenager and an enthusiastic shortwave listener. A career journalist with 3UZ's Nielsen Broadcasting Services and later AAP News Agency and various trade magazines, he became a senior newsman covering the major stories of the day. His active life in amateur radio included the presidency of WIA Victoria, WIA Federal Councillor, news editor of Amateur Radio Magazine and guest editor, as well as an honorary life member of the WIA. Jim received their highest honour in 2011, the G.A. Taylor Medal. Jim was age 71. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
A reminder that the 2018 nominating period for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award opens March 1st. Full information and the nominating form can be found on our website, www.arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab at the top of the page. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We are finally quieting down after a series of solar storms has rattled us over the last couple weeks. But old region 2699 is going to be rotating back into Earth view here in the next couple days. Is it going to give us another round of trouble? Those stories and more in the news this week. We're finally quieting down after a series of solar storms over the past couple weeks have bathed Earth in active to even minor storm conditions. It hasn't been so busy as to cause a lot of aurora down at mid-latitudes, but it has kept your aurora photographers at high latitudes pretty busy. But meanwhile, most of that is now rotated to the sun's backside. We don't have any more fast wind. It's kind of all gone. What we do have is region 2700, which has been a little bit active. It actually fired off a mini solar storm here just in the last day or so, but it most likely isn't going to cause much of a disturbance at Earth. We might get a little bit of something the beginning of next week, but likely not much to bother with. The real story, though, is that old region 2699 is going to be rotating back into Earth view here in the next couple days, and it should boost the solar flux up again. So you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you finally can get out of poor conditions and back into marginal conditions for amateur radio propagation. Switching to our M-Flare threat meter, you can see the last time region 2699 was in Earth view, it actually fired off some decent-sized solar flares, including launching a solar storm at us, which was one of those storms that we've had to contend with over the past couple weeks. But as it rotated to the sun's backside, you can see the X-ray flux here kind of diminishing and diminishing. That meant the solar flux also diminished, and it put us back down into the poor conditions for amateur radio propagation. And that's pretty much where we've stayed. Now, region 2700 has fired off a couple solar flares, but it really hasn't brightened things up enough to pop us back into marginal conditions. But this isn't going to last, because region 2699 is going to rotate back into Earth view again, and it's going to brighten our day. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see it's clear back from the 15th. We started to get active conditions from that series of solar storms. One of them was an eruption from region 2699 the last time it came around. And easily over those 2 weeks, we went from unsettled to active. We even bumped up to minor storm conditions on several occasions. So you aurora photographers have been extremely busy. We did get a little peekaboo aurora down at mid-latitudes, but it didn't last all that long. But pretty much everywhere else in the world at high latitudes, we got some decent aurora. Now, since then, things have settled down and settled down, and they will likely continue to settle down over the next week or so. We might get a little bit of a disturbance at the beginning of next week from that mini solar storm, but probably not. Things should continue to quiet down to normal conditions over the next week. Switching to your solar storm and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are coming down from that series of solar storms that have hit us over the past couple weeks. So as that, we're expecting to get calmer and calmer as time goes on. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions with about a 15 to 20% chance of a minor storm, but most likely things will remain unsettled. At mid-latitudes, we're expecting unsettled to normal conditions with only about a 10 to 15% chance of active conditions. And again, this should continue to quiet down and quiet down. You might get a little bit of a disturbance from that mini solar storm that had just been launched at the beginning of next week, but most likely you're still going to see everything in the green. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We do have region 2700 that's firing off a couple B-class flares, and it's even launched a mini solar storm at us, but it's just not been enough to raise the solar flux level beyond the poor radio propagation conditions. But you amateur radio operators should be going, yay, because old region 2699 is about to rotate back into Earth view. It will likely be renumbered region 2701, and with it is going to come some boost, well-needed boost of the solar flux to bump us back into marginal conditions, and they should happen before the end of the week. So the space weather this week is finally calming down after a series of solar storms has kept us pretty busy over the last couple weeks. So your aurora photographers, you can finally relax and get up, catch up on some much-needed sleep and even recharge your batteries. Now, you amateur radio operators and GPS operators, you've probably been hating life the last couple weeks with this solar storming on the night side especially. And you amateur radio operators have the added problem of poor solar flux on the day side. So radio propagation has been looking pretty bad. But you have something to smile about because region 2699 is rotating back into Earth view here in the next couple days. And up with it comes the solar flux. It may even switch amateur radio propagation on like a light switch, so you can enjoy some decent radio propagation over the next 2 weeks. And both you amateur radio operators and GPS operators will be happy because it doesn't look like region 2699 this time around is going to be an M-flare player at all. So no radio blackouts. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Hey, if you don't follow Dr. Tamitha Scove on Twitter, you really should. It's at Tamitha Scove, capital T-A-M-A, no, T-A-M-A, just Google her. Spaceweatherwoman.com, you learn how to spell her name. At Tamitha Scove on Twitter and Periscope, and you really should follow her because she's got some great information. I think we need to go and check out some smoke and solder and see if we can make the Gordo face. Let's see if we can get us some burned ham while Gordo burns the ham. George?
Well, Don, you know, that's one of those lessons that you only want to learn one time.
Right. And, well, no more than twice.
Yeah. And then you pretty much, you get it down pretty quick. Well, you know, we haven't built anything here recently, so I thought tonight we would look at one of my fun recent projects I did back in December that involved an Arduino, color LCD screen, and ham radio.
This is the first HF rig that I ever owned. It's a Yaesu 857D. And I used it for several years, and it worked fine. Eventually, though, I upgraded to other rigs, and this one sat on the shelf for several years. I decided that I would put it in the pickup truck that I own. It's kind of an extra vehicle. I don't drive that much. And I thought I might as well put an HF rig in there. I've got it. And I did. Unfortunately, after a couple of years, it developed a little problem. And I understand this is common to these rigs. You see the lines in the display there? Well, that's not very good. It makes it difficult to read the frequencies and other information on there. And the S-meter, is that S7 or is that S3 that we're looking at there? Well, it's kind of hard to tell, isn't it? My friend Wayne, KG5RE, has the same rig with the same problem. Supposedly, it's the display that's used in there. It's mounted to a board with conductive epoxy, and after being in a hot vehicle for a period of time, that epoxy begins to break loose, and different segments go out in the display, as you can see there. And it's not a good situation. I don't think you can buy the display itself. You may can send the head in to Yaesu and have it repaired. I have not researched that option. I'm not sure what that cost. But I had some parts sitting around here, and I recall seeing Tommy's segment on a heads-up display for this exact rig back in episode 64 in March of 2014. And I thought, you know, I'll look around and see what parts I've got. Maybe I could just build a heads-up display and use that with this. Tommy had used a monochrome LCD display with his, and that would have worked, but I got to looking around, and I had this 3.5-inch TFT LCD screen for an Arduino. It claims to be a touchscreen. I bought this at Dayton Hamvention. However, upon further investigation, it's not a touchscreen at all, which is not a big deal to me. I was just thinking $20. That's not a bad price for, a graphics display that does RGB color. And this is it right here. It's based on an ILI 9481 display. And I found that those are available from banggood.com currently for only $10.73. On the rear of it, it doesn't say anything about being a touchscreen. There is a micro SD card slot on it, which I don't need right now, but could be handy for something in the future. And it takes a lot of I.O. pins to operate this. If you tried to use it with an Arduino Uno, you'd use up most all the I.O. pins that are available on there. So I'm going to be using it with Arduino Mega instead. Now, the Mega's got a little more memory on it and a lot more I.O. pins. And as a matter of fact, the example code I found on the display, the guy was using a Mega, so shouldn't have any problems there. You just mate the display onto the I.O. pins of the Mega, and I've still got plenty of I.O. pins left over on the sides here. I'm only going to use pins 52 and 53 along with the ground to connect the TX and RX for serial communications, but there's plenty of I.O. ports left for other projects. You could put controls on there, push buttons, anything you wanted, but I'm not going to do that at this point. We'll hook pin 52 of the Arduino to the TX connection on the CAT/linear connector and pin 53 of the Arduino to the RX pin on the connector and, of course, ground on the Arduino to ground on the connector. That pretty much covers the hardware portion of the project. Of course, I'll want to build some kind of box to mount this into. Now let's look at the software. And here, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to search on the internet, find the individual pieces that I need to the puzzle, and then assemble them in a way that will do what I need. The first piece here is a CAT library to work with the FT857D. Fortunately, James Buck, VE3BUX, wrote one several years ago. This is the same one that Tommy used on his heads-up display, and that will save us a lot of work. Now, you can do this project for any rig that supports CAT command or serial commands, but you'll have to do a little work. You can find this library at ve3bux.com. The next piece we're going to need is some way to do the serial communications between the Arduino and the rig. Unfortunately, our display uses the pins that would normally be used for serial communications. However, we can use the software serial library that's included with the Arduino IDE to use other pins. Now, just keep in mind that some pins on the Arduino will not work with this library. The two that we're using, 52 and 53, are supported by it. You can find more information at arduino.cc. We'll need software to translate commands to our display. Unfortunately, the LCD display library that comes with the Arduino IDE will not work with this display. I did a little searching and I found the driver we need on GitHub at the address shown on the screen. It allows us to do most of the basic graphic commands on the ILI-9481 display. However, there's no text characters defined in the library. For that, we'll use the Adafruit GFX library that comes with a lot of included fonts. Plus, you can add your own fonts to it. Now, that's four different pieces of software I've downloaded. I'll need the right code to tie all these together, but there's one more function I want to add that I don't think I've ever seen on a rig before. You know, I've got a little extra room on this display because it's fairly good size, so I thought, why don't I put a count-up timer on it so that anytime you key the transmitter, it will start counting and let you know how long you've been transmitting. That could be handy to help you avoid timing out a repeater or any number of things. Now, a simple timer like that could easily be written on the Arduino, but I found one someone had already written, which meant it's been tested, and it works well, so that will save us a lot more time. You can find the count-up countdown timer at arduino.cc on the link I'm showing here on the screen. Now, most of this code is not super complicated. However, there's a good deal of it, more than we can cover here in this video. So I'm just going to give you a link here to the file where you can download the code and look at it yourself or actually use it in a project of your own. Well, let's see if this was worth all the effort. I could be looking at this on the display, and I might be able to guess what frequency I'm on. Or I could be looking at this. Now, the exposure's been turned down on the camera, so it's not quite as bright as it is in real life. It looks much better to the naked eye than it does through a camera. At the top there, I've got my call sign, my name, and then I'm displaying the mode, lower sideband, and RX for receive. And then I've got a big, nice display there to show me the frequency. And, of course, I'm in megahertz. And down at the bottom, I've got the S units displayed as a numerical value and a bar graph that shows it as a graphic. When we begin transmitting, the indicator changes to TX, and the bar graph then displays power output. And it's a red bar there. The banding that you're seeing on it is not on the display. It's just an anomaly of the camera photographing it. And it's not actually calibrated to power output. It's just a rough approximation. In this case, we were transmitting with lower sideband, so you can see that modulation is affecting the power output. If we change modes to AM, then you'll notice it's a solid carrier there when we transmit. This is an inexpensive display, and it has a serial connection to the radio. If by chance the screen should become garbled, you can force it to redraw by just switching the radio to the packet mode. That way you don't have to power cycle the display in order to refresh the screen. Now here's a feature that I don't know that I've seen on a radio before. It's our count-up timer that keeps track of how long you've been keyed. You know, when you get excited or enthusiastic about a subject, it's easy to talk longer than you realize. This should help you prevent timing out repeaters. This display is not as nice as I've seen on radios that, you know, come with built-in color displays. However, it does help make this old radio a little more comfortable to operate, especially now that I can read the frequency again. As I mentioned earlier, you could build this project for any radio that has CAT or serial commands on it. You could also expand it a lot with push buttons and such to give you a lot of different functions. It just depends on how much time you want to put into it. This project was a lot of fun to build, and I got a lot of enjoyment out of tinkering a little bit with the Arduino and putting that display to work. And the bonus is I can actually use this radio again. And that was my project from back in December. It was a lot of fun, and it really made a big difference with that radio for me. I actually kind of enjoyed operating again without all the lines in the display there. Well, you know, last week I asked a question, and it was, I'm drawing a blank. What did I ask last week? Well, I got a photo here. If Victor will show that for us. We looked at this picture right here of a speaker. Now, I did not know where this speaker came from. It was someone else who sent it in and said, hey, you ought to do a contest on this. So I did a little, I won't say I did some research, but I found out what that speaker was, and I asked, you know, anyone who can, tell me what that is, and we might give you a nice prize. Well, I only had one person who got the correct answer on that, and it was Rob Kohler, KB0MPE, and he said, George, that's the Heil SS2 Magic Box speaker, and I think we've got a picture, yeah, that's of advertising on it, or actually that may be the manual for it right there. I never knew this existed. It's a speaker that Bob built back in 1982. It's a powered 5-watt speaker, and you could get an extension speaker for it that was non-powered. There were actually two amplifiers in the SS2. Plug the second speaker into it, and boy, what a nice idea there. So apparently, well, it's been a few years. You know, 82, that was a few years ago. So I had never been exposed to this. So it was great to know what that finally was, the Heil SS2 powered speaker. Another one of those ham radio innovations from Bob Heil. Like this one right here, and this one's not just for ham radio. You can use this you can even use it with your iPhone, your iPad, your tablet, your stereo. It's got cables that fit any of those devices, and it's also got an adapter for a quarter-inch stereo jack on the end of it.
And there's a little switch here that reverses the phase of one of the earpieces, so it will make the sound appear to come, well, in different positions. It will move it around when you're listening to a pileup. It might help one of the voices in there to kind of jump to the front for you. So nice for that. Very nice for listening to music, too, or voice, you know, whatever you want. Just a good general set of headphones there, the Heil ProSet 3. Congratulations, Rob. We're going to be sending these out to you. Well, this pair is mine, but I've got a box here with another pair in it that we'll be sending to you. Thanks to Heil Sound for supplying those for this. I've got another question for next week, and we're going to take this one out of Gordo's General Class Amateur Radio Study Guide. It's one of the ones that he bookmarked for me right here just for the Ham Nation audience. What portion of the AC cycle is converted to DC by a full wave rectifier? Is it 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270 degrees, or 360 degrees? What portion of an AC cycle is converted to DC by a full wave bridge rectifier? I think that's your clue right there. It's a full wave bridge. If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win one of these right here. It's the DX Engineering silkscreen T-shirt. You can find these at dxengineering.com. Very comfortable shirt. I like mine. It's got the logo real big on the back, so they can tell that you like DX Engineering, whether you're coming or going. So thanks, DX Engineering, for supplying that. We're going to give it to somebody next week who knows their stuff on full-wave bridge rectifiers. And we'll be back in just a moment, but first a message from ICOM.
Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've asked for is here. ICOM's new 7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling system, 110 dB RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Communicate with a new D-Star communications device. Easy to operate. The ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide digital communication. Share pictures and text messages. IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. The ID31A Plus is the new UHF handheld that you'll want. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For February, that's going to be the ICOM ID51A Plus 2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable with extended D-Star coverage. Terminal mode, access point mode. You can send and receive pictures, send and receive text messages. You can set the transceiver's DR functions from the RSMS1A application or a map application. You can see the location of the repeater sites or other DPRS stations on the map application. You can view and export received history of the transceiver, view detailed data in the transceiver's repeater list. And you can import and export the repeater list and the call sign list from or to the transceiver. And, of course, there's a free downloadable Android app available. That is the RSMS1A app. ID51A Plus 2, someone's going to win that. It Well, we're going to have to see. You've got this evening is the last chance to register for this February grand prize drawing. So do it after this. And also register after each episode of Ham Nation for another great ICOM prize. Always been a radio here. And you might also win some swag if your name is drawn in the meantime. So sign up. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America on Facebook and on Twitter. And now I've got a video here that our friend Randy K7AGE sent to us from his recent visits at Quartz Fest.
Oh, we're having our youth day, so they are showing off their transmitters that they've been working on for the past week. So being able to talk about them, showcase them. They've done some really unique, amazing designs, and they're pretty anxious to be able to use them this week. So.
Carl, it's lovely to talk to you. So this is Steven. He is a Fox Zone transmitter spider, and the original purpose of him is, of course, for the game, but also to be hidden. So instead of it being a big, bulky machine, or just the little CPU unit, instead of it being like on the ground, it's a spider, so it's not as easy to notice. So some people would just walk past it.
To give you an idea, that's not their boards. They actually put their circuits on a board. That's their circuit lead to lead. That's about a quarter mile to half mile range, depending on the antenna. Two wires in for power, one wire out for antenna. And actually, the kids are trying a lot of different ways to make their program self-sustaining. They have been doing a lot of things. They're actually selling and installing off-road radio kits, but they hope to take this to market this year, sometime this year, to actually produce this in mass and get it out there. What's really interesting, their design, which is now completely prototyped, it has two buttons and an LED on the end. And when you get this, you don't need a computer and a driver to program it. You can take the button, watch the LED, and use Morse code to program your call sign. And even better, the other button lets you select between 16 tracks. Yes, sir.
Whose design is that?
It's the kids. It's a simple circuit.
Okay.
It's a simple microcontroller, so they had to learn how to program microcontrollers.
Okay.
For their first program, they're using PIC basic.
My name is Adeline Valenzuela. My call sign is Kilo Mike 6 Hotel Foxtrot X-Ray. I have a transmitter here, and I chose a flower. So the flower is the antenna, and the battery can last for an hour.
Wow. Shawnee, call sign. Is KI7QBO. These are all transmitters. They're just separate and different colors.
Yeah,
they're inspired by high-end brands, whatever, like Gucci.
Oh, I thought it was in your drink cart.
No.
You got building to put in the drink cart.
No.
Yeah.
My name is Montana, and my call sign is KM6IGO.
And what you got?
This is an elephant transmitter. Yeah, her name is Ellie. Ellie the elephant, and she likes to sit on this rock. And the battery pack is located in here, and it was slit. And the battery pack was put inside.
That is cool.
That's how you turn it on.
Okay.
And it'll be easy to hide her because she blends in with the
and
rock.
How far do you think the range is? Like a mile?
Not really a mile. You
okay.
You have to be kind of close. He's so tiny.
You're supposed to know that before
right.
You got
like, unlike other kids where he has a big dinosaur. But since he's tiny, he may be harder to find. But
that's right.
He doesn't last as long. And he has a smaller...
And what kind of battery's inside?
You know.
I know.
You know it.
Lithium.
Lithium. Okay, a little lithium battery.
Yes, he's very tiny.
Great.
He had to go through surgery, but he's okay now.
You know, you've seen that before, haven't you?
You can hear our call sign.
No.
This is Neil's design.
He makes all of our specials, but he's 144.
And with a shorter antenna, that becomes a radio... It's copper-plated paper towel. And when you turn it, the only opening, the only place RF can penetrate is here, so it helps you identify the location. That's a W6FOG creation. That's Neil.
We got little slips so we can vote.
We do. We have little slips, and we're asking everyone to cast their vote on their most unusual or the most creative or best craftsmanship. So we want everyone to get involved here at Quartz Fest and we'll come celebrate our next generation of hams.
Here's the same frequency. 147?
Good afternoon, Quartz Fest 2018. So we've got a few awards. The votes are in. K1AN took all those votes.
Best presentation, Jack, KI7BYX. He gets $40 for the best presentation.
For the most creative design, we have Adeline, KM6HFX. Come on down.
Okay, next is funniest design, Montana, KM6IGO. And she gets also a $40 Amazon.
Best craftsmanship. And that goes to the designer series, Miss Shawnee, KI7QBO.
All right. Most unusual, Rob. Not yet a ham. He's studying. And he receives a $40 Amazon. Okay, for the winners, third place goes to Carl. He gets an $80 Amazon. Woo! Second place goes to Ashton.
Ashton, second place. Come on up, Carl.
And she gets a $100 Amazon purchase. And last but not least, Adeline in first place with $120 and an Amazon purchase.
You know, one of these years I'm going to have to make it to Quartz Fest. Thanks for getting that video for us, Randy. It looks like they were really having a great time there. Well, I know we've all been waiting on it, and it's time that we brought Amanda in here and see what's going on out west.
Hey, I have to show you something. This can you see it? Yeah. This happens to be sitting in our desk. Yeah, this is a little screen. It's actually being used for an open spot right now.
Uh-huh.
But I better put it back in the package, otherwise my dog might eat it. Jeff is helping work on somebody's repeater. Yes. No, you cannot eat this. And you happened to mention it. So I was like, hey, I have one of those little Hummers sitting right here. Not to mention, this is like Geekazoid area. I have these sitting here right next to the radio. I don't even know what Perfect. He's using them for. All right, let's get to some announcements first here. Let's see. The first announcement I have is, you guys don't, I know you've all done this because you're all responsible Twit viewers, but don't forget to fill out the Twit survey online, and I'm sure Victor will be happy to show you where that website is. Thank you very much.
twit.tv/survey.
Thank you. twit.tv/survey. Or just Google Twit survey. I'm sure it will come up. My second announcement tonight is, if you guys don't follow us on Facebook, we announced a happy birthday to Martin, and that's his call sign that you guys know Martin Jew, don't you? K5FLU, oh, yeah. The founder of MFJ. Happy birthday, Martin. It's his 74th birthday. And some of the comments I read, if I remember correctly, is that he's such a nice guy. He's kind of like Bob Heil. You go up to him at a ham fest, you shake his hand, he sits there for a moment, talks to you about his products, answers any questions you have. So thanks so much, Martin, for everything you've done for the amateur radio community. I don't know how long MFJ has been in business, but I know it's been a really long time. Let's see. Now, this is kind of a funny question. Someone had asked, they wanted a question for Gordo and what he thought about Energizer batteries. So I'm just going to ask you, George, have you taken the Pepsi Coke challenge with Duracell versus Energizer batteries? What do you think? One better than the other?
No, I have not taken the Pepsi Coke challenge. I've used both. When I buy batteries, I buy whichever one of those Sam's happens to have in stock. At that point. So I've used both, and I think either one of them are fine batteries. I always lean towards Duracell, but I don't know that there's any validity to that. I've heard someone say Rayovac makes some good batteries. Now, I know they used to make some cheap ones, and they were real popular, but I haven't used any of theirs recently. But, yeah, the cheap batteries, they're just bad news. Just stay away from them.
You know what I've heard? I have, well, I don't have a, yeah, I don't know. I they're all about the same, actually, except if you go, like, get the ultra, ultra, ultra cheap batteries. But I'll tell you some inexpensive batteries that do seem to work. I have not tried these because I don't have a Costco membership. But the Costco private branded batteries, I understand, are every bit as good as the copper top and the higher name batteries. But like at a much lower cost. And again, I'm not a Costco member. I have not tried those batteries, but I've heard that they're very good. It's not an ad. And, it's just something I've heard.
And we bought, like, when Radio Shack was going out of business, everything was buy one, get one free in their battery department. So we have four packages of probably 36 AA Radio Shack batteries. And now Jeff's like, I don't want to open them because they're kind of keepsakes.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just put batteries in my remote control, please.
Of course, you know, Radio Shack used to do the battery club, the where you have like the battery of the month. You had a card and you could go in every month and get a battery, and they would snip your little card and you get a battery free every month.
Yeah.
Really?
I miss Radio Shack so bad.
Yeah, those were really bad.
Yeah.
The cheap ones, they were really bad. But the better Radio Shack batteries are pretty good batteries.
I can't keep a straight face. I'm sorry. I just see Gordo like, you one. Did. I cannot trust you ever, Don. I cannot trust you.
Oh, wait. It was dimmed out. No, that's much better. Yeah,
that's better. Yeah, I said that to him in the break.
Yeah,
he's one of my best friends, but I'll tell you what.
the show between the show.
So I do have another battery. I want to bring this up because it's actually kind of important. All of your old cell phones, some of your Samsungs, some of those that don't have removable batteries, the lithiums. I want to tell you a very scary story that happened here in my own household. We use some of our old smartphones for cameras out in our chicken coop. It's kind of cool. You just put IP webcam on your old smartphone and you put it on your Wi-Fi and put it in an area, and it's fun. But Jeff decided to take the backing off of one of them, and the battery was really swelled. And he said, huh. And he kind of pushed on it. Boom. The battery exploded right in our house and flames were shooting out of it. Well, thank goodness he was right next to the back door so he could run outside with it. But you know, if they're not removable batteries, you might want to think about not taking the backs off of them and messing with them. It's just safety precautionary there because almost blew up our whole house. All right, let's move on. I have some more questions here. You know, this is really a Gordo question. Are any of you familiar with Packet?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I use Packet just a little bit for some airy stuff, but I use it with an older computer, and this is a Windows 10 question. So, George, I'll send this to you. What is a good terminal program from Windows 10 for a KPC3 Plus Packet? And I'm going to, guys, anybody that doesn't know what a Packet terminal looks like, I'm going to show you. This is our Camtronics, basically the same thing. And, George, go ahead.
Yeah, well, this is probably a Gordo question. I haven't used Packet in probably 20 years. But I don't know what is current. If you're just looking for a terminal program, which you can operate it with just a standard terminal program, I just happen to be looking for some serial terminals today for Windows 10. And I found one called Termi, T-E-R-M-I-E, that seems to work. You might do a search and find that and try it. But, you know, there's probably some Packet programs out there specifically to work with a TNC that, you know, would have the features to make it a little smarter, a little easier to work with. I just don't happen to know any of them right off.
Okay. And one person in the chat room is saying PuTTY. And that's funny because every time I come to Jeff's laptop, which is what I'm on right now for the show, he always has PuTTY. The PuTTY window opens. So that would possibly make sense. And I know it is free for download. Mm-hmm. I would say it's more of, I'm not going to say it's like MS-DOS based, but it looks like that. That's what the terminal window looks like. So maybe a Linux kind of thing. I'm not the best at answering that question, but I have seen the program itself.
I haven't played with Packet in forever. I just did a Google search for ham radio Packet on Windows 10, and I'm pulling up a DX Zone page for Packet radio programs. Hamscope is one. WinPack, WinTNC, KA Gold and PK Gold. I know I used to use PK Gold and KA Gold on like Windows 3 and Windows 7 machines a long time ago.
And
Windows 10 is backwards compatible. Windows 10 is really backwards compatible because I've got some stuff that ran really great on Windows 8 but would not run at all on Windows. I mean, ran really great on 7, would not run at all on 8. But when I upgraded to 10, all the stuff that didn't run on 8 ran just perfect on 10. So try something like that. I know the KA Gold and PK Gold I used worked really, really good. I don't know anything about WinTNC or WinPack.
And we use Windows 7 here on this computer, and currently on his startup menu, he has Outpost PMM. So Outpost is still usable, I'm going to guess. Even if you installed it on 10, you could run it in Windows 7 if it didn't want to run in 10.
Dave, KC9EI in the chat room, Dave, KC9EI says PuTTY is free and works fine on Windows 10. So that may be the best one for you.
Yeah.
There you go. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I have PuTTY installed on my Windows 10 box. I use it for other things, but yeah, it runs fine on Windows 10. And one other thing about some of those packet programs you mentioned there, Don, and maybe we should mention, you don't have to have a TNC these days to
get on packet.
Yeah, right, just use the sound card and your computer connected to your radio. So there are a number of options out there like that, I know. So you might check before you download one to see if it supports a hardware TNC, not a software one.
The good thing is there are, with Aries operations, again, the actual TNC is pretty helpful to have your mailbox in there. Just because there's so many times when you don't have an internet connection, especially during wildfires and stuff, you go to a shelter and look at the pros and cons, and it really just depends on what you're going to be using it for, I would suppose.
Yeah, if you're doing a lot of emergency communications, I think having that hardware TNC of the Cantronics would probably be your best bet, because that way you're not going to have to worry really about the program crashing or something, as long as the hardware TNC is still up. It's still storing on that memory, I think. It's been so long since I fooled with Packet. God, it's been forever.
It is true, but you look at the back of these, and there's like serial ports and stuff, and that's hard to connect to your new computer.
Right.
So
that's true.
Be good at being able to make a makeshift cable to make that work.
Sounds like a good reason to have a legacy computer in your shack running something like, I don't know, Windows 3.1 or Windows, I don't know if it'd run Windows 7, but running something that would work on that was really, really stable. Even Linux, you could probably do something like that on an old computer and make it a Linux box and make it work.
MS-DOS.
Oh, I believe so.
Yeah,
I think so.
DOS. Yeah, just plain old MS-DOS. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Be pretty bulletproof.
There you go. And very stable. Let's see. I have one other question. I know we're a little bit over
time. This guy's getting rid of some stuff. So
there you go. Yeah, you can probably find something in there. He's got two or three.
Speaking of that, if you guys see TNCs at any swap fest that you go to and they're $25 or less, buy every single one that they have. Buy them. Yeah. Because they are pretty golden anymore. All right. Let's move on. One last question. This is from Jim, KI7AY. He asks, what do you think would be a good antenna to use with an AH4 on HF that is mounted on a tripod outside an RV? We need Randy for this question.
Ooh,
what do you think,
yeah,
George?
Portable ops.
Yeah.
If you can find one, one of the Outbackers would be great. There's several other clones now that are sort of like an Outbacker where it has a wander lead that you tap for whichever band you want to be on. You tap in a different tap on the antenna. You can find those relatively cheap now. They're good for multi-bands. If you're looking for probably best efficiency in something like that, maybe a ham stick. Of course, you'd need one cut for every band that you wanted to operate on.
Don't they have the little screwdriver-type antennas that are not motorized for you? I know I had one for my, my 817 called a super antenna. And now, of course, it wouldn't, if you're looking at putting it on a, well, he said an AH4, that's a tuner, that's not an amplifier. So yeah, something like that, some type of, if you had like a manual screwdriver type antenna, yeah, you could use that, and that would work really well.
MFJ makes one. Also, Wolf River Coils makes some really heavy-duty coils that work kind of like, well, similar.
Like a bug catcher. You could make a bug catcher with like it and just clip on the different. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. We're solving problems left and right here.
There you go. So, Jim, you have several options there. You know, people just like to see someone else's setup. I think that's what helps a lot of us is that, I see that. That looks like that would work. So,
and those bug catcher type antennas with the great big coil, the Q is so high and they're so efficient that they get out so well. That's why those Texas bug catcher type antennas were so great for mobile use. I mean, the bad part about mobile use on those things is that they did catch all kinds of bugs and they were just so huge and ungainly and such a big wind loading. But if you're using it on a tripod outside of an RV and you're stationary, you got no problem with that. And man, just an incredibly efficient antenna. I'd do that.
Absolutely. I really like those Tar Heels too, which are motorized, but those are pretty nifty. Little expensive for me, but all right. I think that's it. Don't forget, everyone, the DX contest is this weekend. That's the ARRL DX contest. Starts Friday evening and goes till Sunday evening. I'll be participating. I'm just looking for countries I haven't worked before. We always kind of try to have a lot of fun with it. And it's funny because Jeff and I will be sitting here and I'll try to work him for a few and then he'll try to work him for a few. And let's just face it, I win most of the time. All right, let's move on. Well.
You're a YL, that's why.
I can't help it. Jeff turns the highs up really high on the mixer and stuff, and he's like, I should break through. I've got to break through. All right. We've got some nets tonight. Unfortunately, the 40-meter net is not going to happen. KC7, FPF is not feeling well tonight. Get better soon, Kevin. I can speak. And we've got the 75-meter net, and I did not see the frequency on that. Oh, wait, 3908. He just popped it up there. 14 Charlie for the D-Star net. Don't forget the Dew Drop In for EchoLink net, and we have the DMR net on TAC 311. Usually try to check into all three of those if I can. So, everyone, that's it. George, I think you're wrapping it up tonight.
Yes, I am, and thanks for all that information, Amanda. And that was some good questions tonight, particularly good ones. It's just a shame we didn't have Gordo here to answer that first one, but Don and I stumbled through it. Before we go, Don, any final words?
No, just, of course, good to have WTWW, the Mighty Shortwave, back on 5085 at full power. And, of course, don't forget, tomorrow, March 1st, is the opening for the Young Ham of the Year nomination. So go to arnewsline.org, click on the YHOTY tab at the top of the page and find out everything you need to know. And nominate somebody. We want to have a hard time picking a good Young Ham this year. And you do that, and then we will see you with the Young Ham of the Year Award presentation the third weekend in August in Huntsville, Alabama. George?
Okay, Don. Well, if you're going to be at the Rain Louisiana Ham Fest, not this coming weekend, but the next, I plan on being there as well as my co-host, Tommy from Amateur Logic, and Emil, the cheap old man, KE5QKR, will be with us as well.
And, I may try to bum a ride with Emil. I can make it to Slidell. I don't know if I could make it. My car, the way it is. I don't know if I could make it all the way to Rain, but I may try to bum a ride with Emil.
Okay. Yeah. I imagine he wouldn't mind having some company. So
Want a free admission at the Hammond, Louisiana Ham Fest. One of the prizes I won was a free admission to the Rain Ham Fest. So I've already won.
Oh wow. Yeah, that could be like a double win. We'll be looking for you. Any of you there, say hello. I'm looking forward to it big time. Never been to that Ham Fest before, but I understand it's going to be one heck of a time.
And so, you and George and me and Emil on a double date. That's nice.
I don't know about that, but they will all be there, and they've got crawfish and beer. So,
woohoo!
You know.
I think I cut a little too late for you to see the horror on George's face.
No, I saw it in my mind's eye.
Yeah. It was pretty horrific. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
All right. Thanks for being here tonight, everyone. Join us again next week for another Ham Nation. Don't forget to go to twit.tv/survey. Fill out the survey there and let Twit know more about what you think about their programming and what you would like to see. 73 next week from W5JDX.
Good night.